Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 104 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON field investigator in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. And today we are welcoming special guest, Michael Cameron. Michael is an author of the new book called High Strangeness, A Lifetime of Alien and Paranormal Encounters, which is actually on the way to my home as we speak. I cannot wait to get a hold of that and start digging in. But Michael is also a lifelong experiencer and researcher in the field of high strangeness. We're going to be going over his very own experiences that he's had throughout his life, which some of them I've already heard. They're very intriguing and interesting, and I'm sure some of you guys can relate to that. So we got a lot of stuff to go over today. So as we always say, strap on them seatbelts. We're going for a ride. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 104 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON field investigator in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. And today's episode is sponsored by Kevin Briggs' new book, Spiritual Consciousness, A Personal Journey. You can get that over to our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com or in the description of the episode below. Today, we want to welcome special guest, Michael Cameron. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hello there, Jesse. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I've been waiting to have this conversation with you for some time now. So I'm happy to finally have you on and be able to do this with you.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So I guess let's start from the beginning. You started having experiences when you were pretty young. Do you want to start us off where it all began for you?
Yeah, well, when I was born, I was an unexpected child. I was born premature, so I was in hospital for quite a long time as a baby. But when I come out, the house that I grew up in was in London, and it started to experience, you know, poltergeist activity. So from my early beginnings, what I've been told later on by my parents was that, you know, orbs of light were seeing flying around in the bedroom where my cot was, and strange entities were seeing, you know, looking over the cot at me. And then there were outbreaks of poltergeist activity, you know, ranging from cold spots in different rooms. Disembodied voices were heard calling my mum when she was in the house alone. Objects began to move and vanish and then reappear. And then, you know, my grandmother on my mum's side, she had just recently passed, you know, I guess into spirits. And she was fond of sitting in this rocking chair in one of the rooms. And every night, almost every night, my parents were woken up by the sound of this chair moving. And when my dad went down, often it was him that went down to investigate, and he went into the room, the chair was seen to be rocking, but then it suddenly comes to a halt, you know, like somebody had just got out of it.
Wow.
And also in the house as well, the house was built during the 1970s, and they were quite strong buildings then. And the walls inside the house, you know, if you were to bang them with your hand now, it would be like a thud. But at the time, there was these loud banging sounds that could be heard at the bottom of the stairs. And they were, you know, what would be similar to, you know, stereo surround. They echoed and they were really loud. And then when my dad used to go back to bed, they would, you know, they would stop and then they would start again. And, you know, there was also a time when I got, you know, as I mentioned in my book, I've got three brothers, Francis, Kevin and Sean. The two, Francis and Kevin, are a lot older than me and Sean. Me and Sean were closer to, you know, 2 years apart. But they had experiences as well in the house. You know, Francis at one time was asleep in the bed and there was this big oak, heavy oak wardrobe that was toppled over on top of him. And, you know, as I say, he wasn't hurt, but he was shocked. And then Kevin at one time was walking up the stairs and something pushed him down the stairs. So, you know, the activity in the house, it started off quite mild, but then it became increasingly more, or could be more dangerous. But because, you know, I grew up at the time, Jesse, in a strict Roman Irish Catholic family, in a community as well, you know, priests and nuns. And so because of the tight-knit community and everyone knew everyone, my parents at the time, they never, you know, told anyone. But it was only when this activity started to get more sinister that they reached out to the church, and a priest come in and blessed the house, and, you know, the activity began to stop. So, you know, these were the earlier parts, I guess, of growing up in a house that was haunted.
Right. Did you ever find out why it might have been haunted? Was there any history to the house or anything like that?
Well, the house was built, you see, it was built on a ground, you know, at the time that were, it had a, you know, quite a lot of history. It was built actually on the remains of a Roman leper's graveyard.
Oh, wow.
From Roman times, you know, when they had leprosy, they used to kick people out from behind the walls where they used to live, and they used to be buried in one of the cemeteries outside the Roman walls. And as I found out when I was researching this book, it happened to be on the location of where my home was.
Wow.
Where my childhood home was. And because in the area that I grew up in London, it's basically, you know, close to the Tower of London, which is, you know, would have been 10 minutes away from me, where, you know, where the crown jewels are kept.
Okay.
For the king of England. So, you know, the whole of the area was considered to be Roman burial grounds.
So what age was that happening at that house? What was the age range? Your age range?
From infancy, really. But, you know, the most of the other activity with, you know, the, you know, UFO, UAP was around the age of 4 years old.
Okay, yeah, I'd love to hear about that as well.
And I think that's quite common. You know, I'm not sure what, you know, what ages you come across, Jesse, when you're doing your investigations with, you know, abductions or anything like this with children.
Yeah, the research just came out recently, and I've been seeing this as well, and even with myself as an experiencer, that it does start at a younger age. Most of the time, we just don't realize it because we've passed it off as something like, you know, maybe the Easter Bunny or Santa Claus or, you know, something like that. So we never really looked at it as a UFO encounter until later in life. But yeah, I mean, I would love to hear exactly what you had to go through and your experience at that age.
Yeah, well, the thing is, when we, you see, I grew up in a schoolhouse. So it was in my childhood home was in the grounds of the school, the junior school that me and Sean went to. My dad was the school keeper, you know, who took care of the school.
Okay.
And so in my book focuses primarily on this particular house and location, because this is where my earlier and teenage experiences happened. You know, but as I often say on podcasts, at the time, Jesse, I didn't realize that this phenomena follows you. And, you know, because when I do go in and write my book too, I will explain in there, you know, that when I left this area, this type of phenomena followed me.
Right. The hitchhiker effect. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And at the time, being a child and a teenager, and also during the 1970s and, you know, growing up in the type of community that I did, you know, you don't understand that, do you? That this type of phenomena actually follows you about.
Right. Yeah. And you have no idea what it is. So it's kind of fearful in a way too, you know?
Yeah.
And then you don't have anybody to talk to because it is back in those days, you know? So there was stigma that, you know, you had to worry about your career and how people looked at you. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it was like, you know, it's very isolated. But in this particular case, I mean, it was a summer holidays and I was with Sean, my brother, who's, as I said, he's 2 years older than me. And we were out playing on the side of the house where we were. There was a green slope, you know, and we were playing football. We were kicking around the ball and you know, what would be soccer, I guess, in the States. And we were, you know, Sean decided, why don't we go and take a walk around the school grounds? Because my dad had been working in the school, you know, with cleaners. It was the summer holidays, 6 weeks holidays for the children. And he'd gone back to the house to have a bite to eat with my mum. And so me and Sean, you know, we wandered off around the school grounds. You know, it's set behind, you know, a lot of fencing and, you know, gates. So, you know, we were relatively safe there. And so we walked off and we were going towards where the infants' classes were and the school hall and library, you know, the outside buildings. And there was a staircase, a concrete staircase that went up into two platforms. And Sean went up one of the platforms whilst I was below. And I remember looking at fire ants, you know, the red ants.
Yeah.
And whilst I was looking at them, the sky at the time, you know, it was a clear sky, blue. As I said, it was sunny and there was just a few white clouds about. It was a very hot summer's day. And, you know, one time I heard Sean call out to me and he said, "What is it? What is it? What is that?" And then when I looked around and I went to where he was standing on this, you know, top of this platform, and he was pointing up at the sky, and it was then I followed his finger pointing up at the sky, and I could see, you know, what we now know to be a classical daylight disc, a silvery metallic, you know, saucer type ship. And it was just, you know, sort of moving slowly in the sky, you know, enough, I guess, for Sean to see it. But I think Sean noticed it more because I think the sun had been hitting the metallic metal, and making it shine.
Okay.
And it was then that the ship, this craft, whatever it was coming closer to us, you know, and moving closer to where we were. But at that point, Jesse, we sort of entered into an altered state of consciousness, you know, where the, you know, the immediate environment around us suddenly went quiet. You know, almost like, you know, what the British author and investigative researcher who used to be the director, you know, Bufora, Jenny Randalls.
Yes.
She coined the phrase the Oz factor. So I guess it's similar to that. And in this location, Jesse, where we grew up, I mean, at that time as well, it was a busy working week. And in this particular area where I was living at the time as a child, it was so busy. You know, we had one of the biggest police stations in London. And often you'd have the police cars going up and down the road with their sirens and lights, you know, flashing. And there was lots of people at work, you know, going about their working day lives. So, you know, I'm not sure if anyone at that time was to see this object. But at the time, though, you know, we went into this altered state and, you know, we must have had some sort of missing time because suddenly we snapped out of it. You know, I was, you know, afraid. I was disorientated. I was confused. I didn't know what happened. I didn't even know sort of at the first of all where I was. You know, and it's often I say to people, you know, it's almost like when you're sleepwalking and suddenly someone wakes you up and you're not sure where you are or how you got there.
Yep.
And Sean at the time, you know, when I looked across at him, he was still, you know, in this altered state, almost like a zombie-like. And suddenly when I kept on calling out his name, that he sort of snapped out of it. But, you know, when we looked up at the sky, the object had gone. And, you know, the environment returned to how it was. But it was at this time that I started to panic and I started to run from this location. And Sean, you know, followed me. But when we were running back to the house where we knew where our parents were. But at the same time, we were scanning the sky, you know, to see if this object was following us.
Absolutely.
But we couldn't see anything. So, you know, we burst through what would be the kitchen door or the back door. And, you know, our parents were sat at the table having something to eat. And we got scolded by Dad because we scared Mum because we suddenly burst through the door, you know, and Sean was telling him what we'd seen. But you know, their reaction was a little bit, you know, when you look back at it now, it was a little bit you know, odd in some ways, because they didn't seem to be that surprised. You know, it was almost like, I don't know, looking back, maybe they'd seen things like that themselves. But, you know, they all they did was look at each other. And then my dad just said, but, you know, it's okay. Everything would be all right. Just go back to play, but stay close to the house where we can see you. So, you know, that was their first sort of thing, experience that me and Sean had together.
Now, did you happen to hear anything coming from the craft or any, you know, feel anything in the air, like electricity or anything at all?
I don't really remember that bit, Jess, but it's all Jesse. But also, just, you know, all that I remember is that we did enter an altered state of consciousness. It's almost like we were, you know, shifted.
Right. Did you ever like, from even to this day, have any of those memories ever slowly come back at all, or you still don't remember the entire time?
No, I don't remember the rest of it. I do, you know, as I said, from my book, you know, I got a marker memory to the experiences I have. And in my book, they were in quite a lot of detail about everything that I experienced. But
right.
there are as parts of my memories that are fragmented.
Okay. So now to me, it kind of, you know, usually this stuff is generational, where it goes back into people's families for decades and years, you know?
Mm.
And to me, it kind of sounds like maybe your mom and dad did have experiences the way that whole situation kind of went down.
Yeah. I know that my dad has, you know, he was, you know, like a nuts and bolts type of guy, you know. He didn't really speak about it much. Every now and again, he would say things to me. So, you know, he did have experiences before or during World War II. You know, he'd been in the Royal Air Force and as a flight engineer. He did, when he was, before he met my mum, and he was in Diggs in London, basically. He was staying in Diggs. He did experience, you know, paranormal activity there. And as I mentioned in the book, he did have some paranormal experiences in this location as well. But my mum, I believe, was an abductee because of some, you know, she didn't really speak to me about things that much. But there was one time she did share an experience with me, and it pretty much, you know, from what she described, would seem to be one of the, what we now know to be the Greys. And she was a child then. But, you know, if she had been, I don't think she would have understood it and probably didn't speak about it because, you know, who would you tell?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you got to worry about the stigma and the ridicule.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, she was a Roman Catholic, so it's difficult really, you know?
Yeah. It's very hard to deal with that when you're in the church and religion, and I mean, that can destroy your whole reputation, the way people look at you, you know what I mean? So
yeah, it doesn't help, does it? But
no,
slowly we're getting there.
Yeah, absolutely. Today we definitely are. There's big changes happening. It's a little slow, but it's still moving on.
Well, yeah, it's a foot in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Baby steps.
Yeah, and we need to have baby steps because, you know, they're kind of still learning at the same time as we move forward with this. So the government, you know, the churches, everybody. So, did your experiences continue from that point on? Did you have more experiences in between?
Yeah, we did. I mean, again, you know, I had another experience with Sean. Again, it was, you know, during the summer holidays. Again, it wasn't long after this particular one with this type of craft. You know, again, my dad wasn't in the school. He was at home. There was no one else in the school building. But me and Sean decided to go over into the building and play some games, you know. So on this particular day, we went into the school, and I mean, I've got pictures in the book, you know, of some of these locations to give a visual representation of, you know, the location. And, you know, obviously it fits the narrative in the book. But we decided to go over there. We were in the school hall and we were playing hide and seek. So I went off and hid, and Sean went off to count. And I remember he got to, he was counting up to five, and then suddenly he stopped and it all went silent. And, you know, I wasn't sure at the time if he was just trying to, you know, get me to reveal where I was hiding and jump out on me.
Right.
But then, you know, when I couldn't hear him counting for quite a while, I come out where I was hiding from to investigate, and he was standing, and basically there was, in front of where he was, there would be two brown wooden, doors, swing doors, would open up, and they would lead into two similar doors that led into the school hall where the gymnasium equipment was stored. And he was staring through these doors into the school hall. And then he was, again, pointing. He was sort of saying what he said, similar to the first time, what is it? What is that? Sort of surprised, but there was fear in his voice. At the time, looking back, it's obviously because it's something he's not seen before. And so I went to where he was standing. And I do show this in the book with a photograph from the school. And he's looking and into the school, and I'm looking across, and there's this strange looking creature standing next to what would be the school piano, standing there just staring back at us. And, if I was to describe it, it would be similar to the tall being that comes out of the ship in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes.
But the only difference with it is it has huge, big, black eyes. And it was just standing there, it's like surreal, in this location. And again, though, at this time, we went into, again, an altered state of consciousness. And it just felt like time stood still. We were paralyzed. We couldn't move. But then, when we come back from that, wherever it was we went, it was this creature had gone. And again, there was this panic, this terror, wanting to get away from where we were. We wanted to just get away. And we ran back through where we come to, through the door we were going to first come into the school from. But we were going back to, to our parents. But this time my dad was coming back to the school to do work. And he met us at the top, and it was then Sean told him that there was somebody in the school building, and he said that, it's not human, Dad. And I remember looking, scanning their faces to see if we were just kidding with him, messing around with him, but he could see that we wasn't. And he went off to investigate, but I guess he went to investigate somebody, a human being, that got into the school rather than, something that wasn't human.
Right.
And so he searched the school, but, there was no windows broken. There was no doors that had been unbolted from the inside. There was no one hiding, concealed anywhere in the location where we'd seen this creature. So, I'm not sure what he made of it. He just told us to go back and play.
Now, this was the same school in the same area the first encounter happened too, right?
That's right, yeah. This is the schoolhouse was in the east side of the grounds of the school, so as I said, a lot of my experiences, they happen mostly in this house, but at times in the grounds or in the school,
right,
of this, pretty much, they would be either paranormal or one of them would be, I guess, come under cryptozoology, the others are all alien based.
Okay.
Or on one occasion, military.
Yeah, and I definitely want to get to some of those in the second half as well. I want to go ahead and take our break real quick. And then when we get back, we can kind of go into that because that's another important part of your story as well. So we're going to go ahead and take our quick commercial breaks, and we'll be right back. UFO Encounters Worldwide would like to announce our brand new home at the UNX Network. Listen to us every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear UFO Encounters Worldwide podcast. That's on the UNX Network. Introducing the new and sought-after book, Spiritual Consciousness, A Personal Journey, by author and experiencer Kevin J. Briggs. See the photos of what Kevin witnessed and links for the book at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com or in the description of the episode below. Again, that's Spiritual Consciousness, A Personal Journey by Kevin J. Briggs.
UFO Encounters Worldwide wants to hear from you. Have an experience or a sighting you want to share? Contact your host, Jesse Peake, at ufoencountersworldwide@gmail.com today.
Looking to get some UFO merchandise? We'll get some UFO Encounters Worldwide official stickers, and we also have pins. Check out our selection, DM us or email us if you're interested for inquiry, and we'll show you our selection. All pins and stickers are $3 each and $1 shipping, or you can mix and match any five for $10 and free shipping. DM us or send us an email if you're interested. This is your host, Jesse Peake. Check out our official website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Read up on UFO articles, including abductions, close encounters, sighting cases, megalithic structures, and more. Also, check out our new Facebook group. You'll get updates on guests every week, new events coming up, and our schedule of who we're going to have on in the future. Again, that's UFO Encounters Worldwide Facebook group and our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the second half of episode 104. And we're sitting down with Michael Cameron. We were talking about your experiences that you had at the school. And one big subject that comes up again and again, and which is a part of your experience throughout your life, is MyLabs. And I know that some people know of it. Some people have heard the name, but not everybody knows what it entails and the details of it. Would you like to kind of tell your story of how this was your experience and what exactly MyLabs is for everybody to learn?
Well, from my experiences, you know, I'll speak about the first time that I sort of become aware that the military were involved in the abduction phenomena for me. But, you know, from MyLabs, you know, it has two points to it, really. It's the military's interest in alien abductees. And from one part of it is, you know, alien abductees that are re-abducted by, you know, the military, but not the military or government that you consider to be, you know, the military. It's not your traditional military. These are hidden black ops military types that, you know, work behind the scenes. They're hidden and, you know, a lot of the time involved with illegal activities and sinister activities against, you know, specific people. And just to point out, though, that I have to point it out to people is, you know, because I've often been told by others, oh, you're special, you're chosen. But let me just clear that up. I don't consider myself to be chosen or to be special in any way, shape or form. In actual fact, I consider this to be a curse in my life with the experiences that I've had. You know, when you're taken and abducted, whether it's by, you know, non-humans or indeed human beings in the military, it's not a good experience at all. So, you know, I know people do have positive experiences and really that's how they should be, but the reality is it's not often that way. But a lot of abductees, especially in the United States, they've been picked up by these military groups and taken, you know, to deep underground military bases, or otherwise known as DOMs, sometimes in the body, sometimes out of the body, and they're basically interrogated by the military to find out what they know about, you know, these particular beings that are taking them. You know, most of the time it will be the Greys, because the Greys control the abduction programs. I'm pretty sure there's others involved above them, but, you know, from this point of view and this talk, it is because it's primarily the Greys that are taking you on these abductions, especially the children. And on one other aspect of the Milams, it is basically people that are, or, you know, individuals that are taken to carry out certain tasks, you know, very similar to the MK Ultra and the Monarch programs, to do certain, you know, they could be acting as spies for the military, and Milam also can consist of active military personnel that are in the military, or it can be civilians that have specific abilities, that they then can use. They will take these abilities, they will enhance those abilities, a bit like the Greys do it. The Greys take specific abilities in your own, you know, in your own DNA, in your own field or source code, and they will use those abilities for their own agenda. So a lot of the time you're not even aware that you're doing what you're doing. But again, the people that are involved in these activities, I mean, the, you know, I guess victims or those subjected to these type of, you know, to this type of agenda, they've not volunteered to do this. They're taken for specific abilities. You know, you have Project Talent, you know, that is basically based around specific abilities. You know, some people are good at certain things, and those, you know, those particular skill sets can be used, and they are used. You sometimes hear people saying, you know, especially abductees, you sometimes hear them saying that the Greys, you know, when they've had abductions, their psychic abilities, how, you know, they've come aware of them, or, you know, they've been increased.
Yes.
But I disagree with that. And I'll tell you why I disagree with that. When we come into this earth, when we return here, whether you believe in reincarnation or not, it does happen. But when we return here, we have those abilities already. We are divine beings. We have a divine essence. We have a soul. And over a number of, in the amount of times we've been here, we continuously are developing ourselves. Our souls are developing. And, you know, when we return here, whether sometimes you may not have the awareness of that, but if anything, the Greys enhance those abilities, but they're only doing that because they use them themselves. And often is the case is they use them, you know, for their own insidious agendas. And a lot of the time you can't, you know, you can only use a certain amount of that ability. So in a way they switch it on and off. But I think this is probably more so for Milams than it is for abductees. But a lot of, not everyone, but there are a lot of alien abductees that go into the Milam projects. But again, I think they decide more on the ability. I know, you know, in the Milam projects, you have astral operatives that work outside the body exclusively for various reasons and tasks. I mean, it's a huge subject, very deep subject, and obviously a lot more investigation needs to go into it.
Absolutely. And you said it earlier, and you just said it again, you know, they can take you inside and outside the body. Can you describe that so everybody understands what you mean by that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, we all have the ability to move outside of the body. I mean, we do it when we sleep at night. Everyone can do it, and we all do it. It's normal, it's natural. You know, when we have dreams, the dreams are actually the memories from these travels outside the body. The only difference is that we remember it as symbols a lot of the time. It's fed back through from our unconscious mind into the conscious mind. We wake up and we have these, you know, these symbols, and these are basically fragmented aspects of these traveling outside the body. But, you know, sometimes, you know, people have stronger abilities or better at it than others, but don't be fooled by that. All of us can do this. We just need to learn how to do it again. you know, but from, you know, from the Greys perspective, the Greys and the military, I've had experiences where I've been pulled out of the body. You know, you can be taken by force out of the body and abducted this way. And it's just that the only difference is that you're not in a physical body. You're just outside of it, you know, in your astral body. But from my perspective, I'm not sure of others, but I've had quite a lot of these type of abductions, either by the military or by the Greys. It's no less terrifying than when it's physical.
Right. Could you kind of tell us some of these experiences so we can have an idea?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've had one. I'll tell you one that sort of happened but failed. It's one time again in the schoolhouse. My dad at the time had not long, passed away. So I just turned 16. And on this particular night, I was in the house with my mum. And, you know, at the time she was in her bedroom, she was in a single bed, and I was in a single bed at the back at the rear of the room. And again, it was hot summer's night. So I remember it being pitch black outside. The windows were open because it was so hot. And I was laying on the bed, basically. And, after a little while of talking to my mum, I suddenly, as I was laying down and I was looking, I could see sort of above the house, you know, it was suddenly that there was a huge bright light that was, you know, coming from above the house. But I couldn't see, you know, I couldn't see any object with this. I could only see the light. And it was at this time that I was lifted off the bed to the height of what would have been, a wall-mounted radiator. So I was lifted from the bed up past this radiator. In my head, you know, I could hear a really loud buzzing sound. My mum had the radio on, and this buzzing sound was so loud, I wasn't able to hear what the man was saying on the radio. I mean, my mum was in the room, and at the time, I didn't really call out to her, and she didn't say nothing to me. I remember lifting up off the bed, but I held on. I remember gripping hold of the radiator and holding onto it. My body was sweating by this time. And in my head, I remember saying, whoever is doing this, I'm not ready to go with you. I don't want to go with you. And I remember the light suddenly vanishing from above the rooftops, and I just basically hit the bed, you know. I was able to move more, I basically got up off the bed. I remember getting up off the bed, I felt weak, and I was really, my body was like really sweating, my head was thumping, you know, like a sort of boom boom in my head. And the first thing I did was I rushed across to the window. And I was just looking to see where that light came from. What was the source of that light? But there was nothing there. It was just pitch black. And my mum, again, she wasn't talking to me. And I never said nothing to her. And I remember going back to the bed and laying back down on the bed. And it took me a while to go to sleep, but eventually I did. And it was only the next day that I asked my mum, you know, has she seen anything or heard anything? And she said she saw a light from above the rooftops, and she saw me floating from the bed, up off the bed. And she wanted to help me, but she was told to not, you know, don't worry, nothing's going to happen, you know, just go back to sleep.
Wow.
You know, and she wanted to help, and she said she didn't know, you know, she couldn't. So, these things happened to me quite a lot in my childhood. You know, they're just lots of different strange experiences. And, you know, you don't know how to explain them at that time, you know. There's no literature around. There's no one that could, you know, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have, you know, social media groups. Even when I went to the library to investigate, you know, in the 1990s, that's when I started to really research to see what was going on in my life. And I remember going to the local library, and there was no books, pretty much no books about this particular subject, you know, that you could read up on. You know, there was a few books in there about spiritualism and stuff like the mediumship and stuff like that, but nothing to do with, you know, UFOs, especially, you know, UAPs, as we now call them. So it's, you know, at the time it was quite isolating, really.
Yeah, many experiencers that I speak with feel the same way, and it's a shame that it was like that back then, which is why I feel so many are happier that it's much more open and accessible today. Thank God for that. I can only imagine what that would have been like, you know, needing help and not knowing where to go to get it. So has your today in your life today, are you still experiencing these kind of things, or has it changed? Has you been looking at it a different way now? What exactly, how is it today?
I mean, well, you know, in my book is, you know, there are sensitive subjects in my books which probably should have trigger warnings on them, and you know, my book does describe different aspects of my life, so because I want the reader to really get to know who I am and what I'm about,
right?
So it talks about my relationship, you know, with my parents. It talks about, you know, some very not so good experiences I had on this side of my life, but you know, people may wonder why I put them in because I believe they are, from my own experiences now, connected with the MILAB projects. And you know, I've been told I have connections with the Monarch project, with the Montauk project, that's come from other sources that have, at the time, I had some information about this, which I've shared with some other MILABs now. And, you know, they had nothing whatsoever to do with these projects. They didn't know anything about them. They were, you know, basically psychic mediums that have come across, and they've relayed information to me about, you know, being really at Montauk Point, you know, and, you know, that's, you know, how would I get there, really? Because I'm in the UK. But, you know, from when you understand that you can travel outside the body, as I say, there are no borders, there's no passports, and you can go wherever you like within reason. But a lot of the time, these projects, again, it doesn't matter where you are in the world. If you're on one of these projects and you can travel outside the body in the same similar way to a remote viewer can go to quite a lot of places, you can be involved in these projects.
Right.
But where I am today with it is, yeah, I still have abductions. They still take place. They're not out there and not happening, you know, as frequently as they were. But I think you do get times, you know, most abductees will tell you there could be periods of time when they don't have any activity, which is a good thing. And then suddenly it'll start up again. But one of the things that you must understand is that when you're on the, you know, the alien abduction programs, as I say to people on the podcasts, you're taken either in infancy, you're taken as a young child, a teenager, a young adult, a mature adult, and very much so when you're literally near the end of your life. And so, as I say, the child abductee is the adult abductee, and the adult abductee was the child. And a lot of the time, the greys don't take you unless you're on those projects. So if you're an adult that's been taken and you have no other memory of that, you know, normally you will be the child that's been taken. You just may not remember it. So you know, I've had times when people have come into contact with me and they've discovered, you know, that I have these experiences. They're so terrified, they don't want to know me no more, because they think, if you're in my house, if you're sleeping in my house, or you're staying over, that if something happens to me, it's going to happen to them. It doesn't work that way.
So have you, you know, the experiences that you've had where you're not able to remember, have you ever thought about maybe going back and being regressed and doing hypnosis to try to see what may have happened?
I always get asked that question, Jesse. But during the 1990s, as I would explain in book two, I was in a different location at the time. I was, a different age, a different location. And when I was doing trying to understand what was happening to me, because, it was obviously terrifying. And I did actually seek out regression, hypnosis, Jesse. I went to quite a few, and you know what they did? They just laughed at me and said it was a load of rubbish. You can't, this stuff can't be happening to you because that doesn't exist.
Oh, wow.
And at that time, and I've spoken to a few hypnotherapists now, and in the UK, it's regressive, regression by hypnosis under the Hypnotherapy Association of Great Britain, I think it is, something like similar to that. They've told me basically they don't do that no more. It's not considered to be, was it ethical? And they said if you do find someone who does that, be very careful, because they consider them to be those who practice in the back of the shops.
Okay.
And they could be quite dangerous, So I do know there are probably some people still in the UK that do that, and they did ask before, and they said they don't get involved with nothing like that.
Huh, that's weird.
Yeah, I reached out to Bufora about 2 years ago, and they told me they emailed me back basically and said we don't get involved in that and we don't encourage it.
Huh, I guess they're sticking with more of the nuts and bolts then.
Yeah, I was quite surprised. I thought they may have, like a list of people.
Right, a referral list.
So
right.
I was a bit surprised when they said that. So that was a dead end for me. I mean, I'm still looking at having regression done. I'm still looking in the UK for somebody who can help me with this.
Okay, well, I got a referral list.
That this is, again, something that I can, it's obviously good for healing, but it's also good to explore.
Right.
And then once I know more about it, then I can share that.
Absolutely.
The fragmented memories, it's interesting what would come from that, and how, what we can learn from it.
I totally agree. Absolutely. We actually have a referral list because I work with MUFON's ERT Experience and Resource Team. We have people that have wanted to be added to the list, and I know there's hypnotherapists on there. If I can find any in the UK, I'll be happy to pass them along to you. Absolutely.
Oh, lovely. Thank you.
Because we do have ERT members in the UK. So, it might work out.
I mean, as I said, last year I was diagnosed with, officially diagnosed with complex PTSD, which is, the difference between PTSD and complex is that it is more than one event that's taken place over a number of decades,
right.
As I've explained, that comes from mostly from the abduction programs as a child and a teenager and dealing with this type of, these type of experiences on your own.
Right. Right.
And,
absolutely.
As when I was speaking, on the UAP, medical interview that I did, I was explaining this, that, most abductees that have the more negative types of experiences, most of them will be experiencing PTSD on some level.
That's right. Yep. We call it anomalous trauma,
Sure, sure. And the effects of that are devastating for each person. I mean, now,
Of course.
At one time I was, when I was, a teenager and a young adult, I was literally sleeping with a blade in my bed. Because if they come for me, I was going to use it.
Right.
But it wasn't until I was writing my book, Jesse, that I sort of come to the conclusion that I may have been experiencing PTSD. But it's only when I sought out a mental health nurse in my community that I actually went to her for another reason. But it was only then that I saw sort of put out a little bit, you know, I was asking the questions. I said to her, have you ever experienced, you know, any like paranormal phenomena, so to speak? And she was the sort of, she was in her 30s. She was quite open-minded. And she said, yes, she's had stuff like that herself. And then, you know, then I started to slowly sort of talk about it. And I sort of told her in a way, you know, that I was an alien abductee. And did she know anything about this? And she said she never knew anything about this. And she was quite open-minded and she wanted to know more. And she asked me, what could she read? You know, if there was any literature, and I said, you know, there's lots of literature out there. But I actually guided her towards abduction by the late Dr. John Edward Mack.
Okay, yes.
And so she actually got hold of a copy of this, and she was reading it, and she was asking me questions. And I was telling her, you know, there's a huge hidden community out there consisting of, you know, people like myself that have been taken by these particular beings and, you know, subjected to lots of different types of, you know, experimentation and had lots of other experiences, you know, within the paranormal fields.
Oh, yeah.
And I said that, you know, they're experiencing trauma. And I said, there's nowhere in the UK, which is a fact, there's nowhere in the UK that recognises this type of phenomena. When you look at complex PTSD, for example, there's a long list of different experiences that people, you know, undergo that causes them to have PTSD, right, or complex PTSD. But at the bottom, as I explain in my book, the only one pretty much that's not on there is anything to do with this type of phenomena. And I think that needs to be recognized now and you know, for healthcare officials to basically to take note and to start to learn about this subject, because right, it ain't going to go away.
No, not at all.
And there's a lot of people out there that need help.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, absolutely. I mean, you know, a lot of the time, you know, we talk about disclosure and how, what would disclosure be like? I mean, you know, but nothing's ever said, nothing's ever addressed about abductees and the after effects of the experiences they've had. Everyone wants to hear about an alien abduction story. That's fine. But what about the person? These people are individuals.
That's right. That's right. And many of them have been put in institutions or they've been over-medicated. And exactly, nothing really helps the underlying issue.
You know, and it can be very dangerous as well. You know, it can lead to all sorts of different problems and issues. I mean, for myself, you know, I can't even turn my light off at night, Jesse.
I have
to leave it on.
Me too.
And I have done for years and years and years. And because if I turn it off, especially between specific times when, you know, things happen between 3 and 5, for example, for me, within that time itself, normally a lot of stuff happened to me,
right,
if I turn those lights off.
My time is 2 to 4 and I keep my light on as well.
Exactly. And you know, and I'm pretty sure, Jesse, when you've spoken to people, you know, for your investigations and, you know, and research, they probably tell you the same stuff.
Yes, they do. Yep. The light seems to help, you know, a little bit.
You know, and like I was saying the other day on another podcast, you know, if you got everyone that listens to this, if you got everyone that's had these experiences and lined them up, you know, we're not all making it up. These experiences happen to us, you know, and the thing is, though, everyone, you know, across the world are having these experiences. We don't know one another. We've had these experiences since children, mostly in times, you know, a lot of the time for me.
Right.
In, you know, when you're in the 60s, 70s, 80s, there's nothing around about this.
There's nothing
that can influence your behavior. You know, when I was growing up in London during the 1970s, you know, in the TV back then, you only had 3 channels in the UK.
Right. Yep. You know,
and it didn't have anything like that on it. And for me and my brother Sean, we wasn't allowed to watch the TV unless our parents were with us. And we were only allowed to watch certain subjects.
Michael, we got a minute left. I just want to make sure you get in and tell everybody where they can get your book at, because I did put it in the description of the episode. But do you want to go ahead and tell everybody where they can follow you and get all that information at?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I've got my book is available, High Strangeness, A Lifetime of Alien and Paranormal Encounters. It's published by Flying Disc Press by Philip Mantle in the UK. It's available on Amazon. It's available on a softback hardcover. It's got an audio version, and it's on Kindle, and you can get it on Kindle Unlimited.
Awesome.
And you know, if anyone wants to contact me, if you're listening to this, if you're an abductee, if you've got any experiences going on, and you want to reach out to me, someone who's having military experiences, you can reach me on social media, on Facebook, under Michael Cameron. That's Cameron with a K. And also, you can contact me on my email address if you like. It's Michael, all lower keys, Michael Cameron. 2023@gmail.com.
Awesome. I'll make sure I put that in the description of the episode too. And then if anybody wants to get in contact and they're having trouble, they can get a hold of me. I'll definitely pass the information along. But I want to thank you for coming on, Michael, today and sharing your experiences with us. I know sometimes it can be hard to relive them as you're telling them again. But I definitely think you're going to help somebody else by telling this today, somebody that's listening. So thank you again for coming on.
Thanks, Jesse. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to episode 104 today. We'll be back next week with two special guests, which will definitely be pretty surprising, and it'll be a great episode. So until next time, remember to keep your eyes in the sky. Well, what another wonderful episode with our special guest today, Michael Cameron. I want to thank him for coming on and sharing his lifelong experiences with us, as well as what we can expect in his brand new book, High Strangeness, A Lifetime of Alien and Paranormal Encounters. If you guys are interested in the book, which I am, it's already on the way here to the house. I can't wait to get a hold of it. You can get that information in the description of the episode below. There is a direct link to Amazon to go ahead and purchase his book. I highly recommend doing so. It's just more of what we went over today, which was really interesting stuff. So thank you again, Michael, for coming on today. Next week, we have two special guests coming on. We have Philip Mantle and Dr. Irina Scott to talk about the Calvin Parker Pasagula account that they just came out with the brand new book. I'm hearing nothing but great things about this book. I'm told it's one of the most in-depth investigations of the Pasagula encounter, with new witnesses, new sightings, and tons of new information. So that should be very, very exciting. I'm looking forward to having both of them on at the same time to talk about the book. It'll be a lot of fun. And please go check out our sponsor. They keep everything that we do here going. It's Kevin Briggs and his new book, Spiritual Consciousness, A Personal Journey. The reviews are absolutely amazing. It's the number one bestseller at BMK Publishing. Kevin goes through his own encounters throughout his life, and being introduced to consciousness at a very young age, and the out-of-body experiences that he's experienced with these encounters. Kevin has been on the show before. If you want to learn a little bit more about the book, you can go back and check his episode out. But I highly recommend that book. I've read it, and it was just so, so good. So you can get that over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com, or in the description of the episode below, you can go to Kevin's website, kevinjbriggs.com. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in this week to our amazing 104 episode. And we'll be back next week with our two special guests, Philip Mantle and Dr. Irina Scott. So until next time, remember to keep your eyes in the sky.